The San Ignacio Festival is an annual event in Boise to honor St. Ignatius of Loyola, the patron saint of the Basques. It began more than 25 years ago, and now thousands come to the Basque Block in Boise at the end of every July to see local musicians and dancers, as well as Basque sporting events. This year's festival starts next Friday, but back in the 1930s and 40s, hundreds of Basques were brought to the western United States to do the desolate work that no one else would do, herding sheep in places like Idaho. Alone for months at a time with hundreds of sheep, the Basques improvised songs, they baked bread in underground ovens, they carved pottery and drawings into the aspen trees, and they listened to the Basque Radio Hour beaming to Idaho, Washington, Colorado, California. These were traditional music and messages between the herders out in the isolated countryside. The Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, are producers of the NPR series Hidden Kitchens. Today, Hidden Kitchens takes us on a journey as we explore the life and the food of the sheep herder of the past.
Radiotopia. From PRX.
It was very hard. 18-year-old kid who's been ripped up out of his community in Europe, and all of a sudden he's in a foreign land with a foreign language, and he's up on top of a mountain with a bunch of sheep.
Today, the Kitchen Sisters present the Sheep Herder's Ball, Hidden Basque Kitchens. Maybe you've been to Sparks, Nevada, to John Escuaga's Nugget Casino. He ran that place for nearly 50 years. We were interviewing Mr. Escuaga for another story, Liberace and the Trinidad Tripoli Steel Band, which is coming soon to Kitchen Sisters Present. Anyway, we were talking with John, and he began to tell us about his Basque heritage and what led him to Nevada.
I'm John Escuaga, John Escuaga's Nugget Casino in Sparks, Nevada. We've been there 48 years. I'm a Basque, if you know what the Basque people are, from the Pyrenees. My dad was a sheep herder when he first came over, about 1900. There's a great number of Basque sheep herders in Idaho, Nevada, California, Montana, New Mexico. In fact, on the ranch where I live, I still have 75 sheep. I just want to keep my heritage going. We have a Basque restaurant at the Nugget, Orozco. That's my dad's hometown in the Basque country.
What about baking that great Basque bread?
Sure, Dutch oven. Dutch oven. If you didn't know how to make bread being a sheep herder, I don't think you'd survive. Our government had a program bringing a lot of the sheep herders over from the Basque country. They were in dire need of sheep herders because nobody wanted to herd sheep in America. That's a lonely job.
When we were following up on John's story for our Hidden Kitchen series, Davia was in Los Angeles visiting her sister Jessie and telling her about Dutch ovens and hidden kitchen traditions of the Basques. And Jessie said, "Oh, the guys out front doing the landscape on our house are two Basque brothers, the Lasartes." Davia grabbed her tape recorder, and we launched into the world of Basque sheep herders.
My name is Francisco Lasarte.
My name is Joaquin Lasarte.
Basque
sheep herder.
You lonely. You by yourself, 2,000 sheep and two dogs. 3 years, you stay there. No vacation, no day off, no holidays. You stay 24 hours close to the sheep.
We make $7 a day. They pay you only once a year.
You cook outside, mostly under the ground. You make fire. You have a Dutch oven. You can cook bread. 90% times it's lamb.
You say Basque to a Westerner and they think shepherd. In Basque country, very few people are shepherds. I'm Mark Kurlansky. I wrote a book called The Basque History of the World. Basques would go out in Western America and for the first time in their life have this huge flock of sheep over a huge expanse of land. Nobody has huge expanses of land in European Basque country.
In 1964,
came to the United States. I have a horrible life in Spain in that time because Franco, you cannot go anywhere, you cannot say anything. Only way you can came to the United States, working sheep herders. Hundreds of people like that in that time in the Franco power.
They would have a sponsor that would get them over here. They were told, go to Noriega Hotel in Bakersfield. My name is Linda Elizalde McCoy. The guys would come in off the train from Ellis Island, make their way to the West Coast. My grandmother would see to it that they were fed, and then their boss would pick them up.
I'm Bernadette Irigoyen, Noriega Hotel. I've been working here for 42 years. I have three brothers. They were shepherds. And then I came to cook. Just guys, no women. I make stew and flan, blow sausage, paella, family style. A lot of Bascos.
Bass sheepherders who were seasonally laid off would spend months in a Basque hotel. The hotels took the old world Basque cuisine, things that were festive food in the Basque country, and they made it standard fare. Beef, chicken dishes, coffee. By the time the herders got down to town, he had all the lamb he'd wanted to eat for a while. William Douglas, the Center for Bass Studies, University of Nevada, Reno.
You count your sheep and you give the water. The worst part, I think, it's in the alfalfa, because if you not take care of them, the alfalfa, a lot of sheep blow.
What do you mean they blow?
They blow. They eat. They never stop it on the gas. They blow it out. You can do huge damages.
It was very hard. 18-year-old kid who's been ripped up out of his community in Europe, and all of a sudden he's in a foreign land with a foreign language, and he's up on top of a mountain with a bunch of sheep. Amongst Bass, there's a whole vocabulary of madness. The sheep herder who goes over the edge, who becomes sagebrushed or sheeped.
It's called the Irinsi. It's a kind of a war whoop. You know, these people didn't have cell phones, and they would call from one area to another to get someone's attention.
You are listening to the Basque Hour, KBOI, in Boise, Idaho, every Sunday at this hour.
My name is Rosita Alegria Artis. My mother was Espy Alegria. She had a Basque radio program that went out to the sheepherders, the voice of the Basque. They listened in their sheep camps. They had little transistors. She wished them happy birthdays, gave them the soccer scores in Basque. During the Franco years, he did suppress the language. The only place you could use it was at home in secret. She'd translate for them. If they had a problem with immigration, she did for them. They never paid her, but occasionally they would give her a lamb. We would throw it on the kitchen table and cut it up and freeze it.
The sheep herder, they organized barbecue and dance and everything. Big day for us.
I have a lot of pictures of Mom dancing at the Basque Sheep Herder's Ball. The men wore Levi's and the women wore house dresses. An accordion, a tambourine, and somebody would play the spoons. They auctioned off a lamb. They had chorizos, Basque sausage. They have a sandwich, pork tenderloin and pimentos, hard crust bread.
I still have some memories, some good ones and some bad ones. Maybe I can sing with those two guys sheepherder song.
When you eat bass food in Idaho, you know it's all about being shepherds, although most of them hadn't been shepherds in Basque country. The Basques came here in the early part of the 20th century, partly because Basques rejected Napoleonic law, including the French law of inheritance, which divides up properties equally among all the heirs. The result is that you get smaller and smaller properties. Basques rejected that, and the traditionally Basque inheritance, the oldest son or daughter inherits the farm and everybody else fends for themselves, which usually means going to the Americas. You know, there had been these huge wars between the cattlemen and the shepherds in the West over grazing land, and the cattlemen had basically won to the extent that they were lacking shepherds and they wanted to get more. And so they actually sought these Basques as shepherds. And they would land in New York City. Somebody would meet the boat, take them to a house in Greenwich Village until they had an arrangement for a flock somewhere in the West. And they would go out and, for the first time in their life, have this huge flock of sheep over a huge expanse of land, because nobody has huge expanses of land in Basque country. The entire seven provinces of Basque country is the size of New Hampshire.
My name is Jean Berin. I arrived here about 10 p.m. in Fresno. We went to the bar. We had a couple of beers. By the time we got home, was midnight. 3 o'clock in the morning, my new boss knocked on my door. We woke up, and we went castrating the lambs. Oh, what am I doing here? You know, the lambs were pretty big. You have to hold them, and the guy cut the sack, believe it or not, he pulled the balls out with his teeth.
Sheep herding is an extraordinarily difficult occupation, not so much from a physical standpoint, but from a psychological standpoint. It's hard to imagine an occupation where you're going to be absolutely socially isolated for days on end and having only your own company. If you're the only human being up on a mountaintop, there are ways in which you are tempted to kind of humanize the environment. You know, put a human mark on the environment. The herder might go up on a ridgeline and start stacking stones one on another, kind of a cairn that's as tall as a person or even taller. The arrimutiliak, or stone boys as they're called in Basque, it would be like putting a man out there on a ridgeline. Then you go over to another ridge, start over again. Now there are three of you instead of you by yourself. The quaking aspen in the American West, if you take a penknife and serrate the bark, you can put a message or an image on the bark. The scarification of those wounds on the tree, over time, your message becomes quite legible. The herder might do an image of their village church, a farmhouse, the farm that they grew up on in the Basque Country. There's a fair bit of pornography. I mean, obviously, these guys are alone up on a mountaintop. They would carve nudes and messages complaining about their loneliness. You know, you put your own name and the date. After 5 or 6 years, you might have Jose Barrenechea and a string of, you know, 1970, 1971, 1972, etc. While out on the range, the sheep herder was exposed to a very sparse diet, just the logistics of getting food to him, 8,000-9,000 feet and up some mountain canyon, and he would be supplied by a camp tender. And the camp tender would have a pickup truck, go to town and buy supplies, wine and the makings for bread. The bread was baked by putting it in a Dutch oven and then digging a hole and building a fire and sticking the oven in there and covering it up with dirt. And then in the evening, he'd come back and the bread would be ready. The camp tender loads the supplies for his herder on muleback, goes up sometimes 10 or 15 miles, and here's the herder, and he hasn't had any human contact for 5 or 6 days. So the good camp tender livens up the situation. He might give him a haircut. He might cook the herder's meal. They would normally have a lamb that they had slaughtered for meat that would last for a few weeks. The camp tender would usually bring them some red wine and then a lot of American canned goods. So, I mean, there really wasn't a Basque cuisine to speak of up in the mountains.
When you're out there with the sheep, you eat lamb and mutton, depending on the time of the year. That's very much the American idea of Basque food. In Basque country, Basques do eat lamb, but it's not at all surprising to go to a Basque restaurant and not see any lamb at all on the menu. But Basque food in America means lamb. My Basque friends in the West are probably going to get very angry with me for saying this, because I've many times had wonderful meals hosted by Basques in the American West, and they always want me to say how Basque their food is. I always very politely do say so, but it's actually quite a bit different than you get in Basque country.
When we were making this story, one of our favorite things was listening to Rosita Alegria Artis tell us about her mom, Espy. Here's more from Rosita. She has the most beautiful voice.
My mother's full name was Maria Expectacion de la O. Y Sara y Echeverria. She got the name because she was born on December the 18th, the Feast of Our Lady's Expectation, and they shortened it to Espy. She was called the Voice of the Basque in Idaho, Voice of the Basque.
You are listening to the Basque program. Mm-hmm. It is brought to you through the courtesy of radio station KBOI in Boise, Idaho.
She had them beam out to the sheepherders in the community or other Basque families out away from Boise. Even in Northern California, they could pick up the program. It went out from, you know, Oregon and Washington and Idaho, and she had quite an audience. It was mostly music. She had a very large collection, the Basque Jota. That's the music that was the background of her program. Accordion music, tambourine usually, and somebody keeping the beat. They usually just had some guy that would take two spoons and whack him on his thigh and beat out the rhythm.
Pete Echevarria Aicha Ogeishan.
There were the songs, and they were dedicated to this person or that person, and usually there was a joke or two. Then there were the soccer scores. My father was a shortwave radio freak, and he would get the scores on shortwave radio from a station in Spain, then pass them on to her. She would make a comment about somebody getting married or, you know, going back to Spain. Or so-and-so, he'll meet you down in Boise for the Christmas holidays. General chit-chat. She did it every week for over 25 years. They were taped ahead of time. In her basement, we had a room set up with a large Wallensack reel-to-reel, and they were brought in to the station by my father. It had to be checked, and I don't know who would read it through because it was in Basque, but it had to be passed to make sure, I suppose, nothing subversive was said, although I can't imagine my mother ever saying anything subversive.
Amen eskatzen dostasuna. La honen izena da El Farolero.
My mother was born in Ermua, the province of Vizcaya in Spain. It's the Basque country. In 1906, Basque was her primary language, and she could also read and write it, which is very unusual. She had a very good education for her age. She came to the United States in 1925, 18. Her mother was a schoolteacher and had come over and was teaching at a Catholic boarding school here in Boise. The Basque community in Boise is the largest community of Basques outside of the homeland. There weren't many people who could read or write Basque. There wasn't much opportunity, you know, especially during the Franco years. Things were really bad. He was punishing the Basque people for siding against him in the Civil War. He did suppress the language, which, of course, is the heart of any cultural group of people. He did not allow Basque language to be taught in schools. You couldn't read it or write it. I think the happy birthday is Sorionak. Sorionak. Sort of a hello and a goodbye is Agur. When I was growing up in Boise, my parents thought that the Basque language at that time had no future. It was a dead language since it was being suppressed in Spain. And the Basque language is one of the oldest languages in Western Europe. It has no similar root in none of the Romance languages, none of those, and anything like it. Very unusual language. All the secrets at our house were in Basque, which was very frustrating. Fortunately, after Franco's death, the Jesuits made a supreme effort to get the Basque language restored. They have made dictionaries now, and the Basque language can be read and written by anybody who has the patience to learn. Not very many Basque are doing the sheep herding anymore. Sheep herders have become Chileans and South Americans. Sheep are not economically a good idea anymore. A lot of the big companies went out of business. They import Australian lamb now in the stores. My father, Henry Alegria, had come to the United States when he was 10, and both his parents died right away, and was an orphan in the community of Boise. And so he didn't have much of an education. He got as far as the eighth grade. You know, he was put out to work pretty soon. So he was very proud of her, and he knew that he couldn't meet the public like she could, but he could always support her. He handled all the technical kinds of things to further her. He drove her anywhere she needed to go because she didn't drive. He wasn't crazy about her learning to drive, but she wanted to learn, and so my husband and I, for her 50th birthday, gave her driving lessons. Mother was very funny, just a great sport, not a very good cook. She was such an active person and was so involved in the community. Sometimes she'd put something on the stove and get caught up in something else and would scorch it, you know. And I have to say, honestly, I never, ever heard my father or Uncle Phil complain. Whatever was set before them, they ate it. My husband always said about my mother, because she really was an unusual woman, you don't ask a racehorse to pull a milk wagon.
The Sheepherder's Ball was produced by the Kitchen Sisters, Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson, with associate producers Nathan Dalton and Brandy Howell, in collaboration with Laura Fulcher, Roman Mars, Eloise Meltzer, and Julia Plevin. And special thanks to our production intern, Ethan Hoffmeyer, for his help with this story.
We'd especially like to thank the National Endowment for the Humanities and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art works. The Kitchen Sisters Present is part of Radiotopia from PRX, a curated network of extraordinary cutting-edge podcasts created by independent producers.
Radiotopia is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation, and thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia.
If you'd like to sponsor the Kitchen Sisters Present or other shows like it, contact sponsor at Radiotopia FM.
You're listening to the Kitchen Sisters Present, stories from the flip side of history.
Radiotopia.
Thousands of people will come to the Bass Block in Boise for the San Ignacio Festival, celebrating Bass culture. That is all happening next weekend. And the Kitchen Sisters, as you heard, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, are independent producers. They are the creators of more than 200 stories for public broadcast about the lives, histories, arts, and rituals of people who have shaped our diverse cultural heritage.